Today on the show, we have Stacey Kehoe, who is an entrepreneur, author, podcast host, an amazing all-round woman who has much experience in getting online. In fact, her book, Get Online, was out over the summer and has become a bestseller on Amazon. I'm really looking forward to hearing how Stacey explains the world of online and how her and her agency, her digital marketing business, help us and entrepreneurs. We have so much in common. Not only is Stacey a property investor, but she's also a consultant. She does digital marketing. She's a speaker. She's an author and a podcast host. I mean, how many similarities can you have? So I'm really looking forward to interviewing her. Let's dive on in and speak to Stacey. So, Stacey, welcome to the show.
So, tell me about you and your business. What does Stacey Kehoe do?
So, I am from New Zealand, but I've lived in the UK for about 13 years. And I started the business, I'm trying to think, about 8.5 years ago now. So, Brandlets of Communications, we're a digital marketing agency. And really, we help brands to build their presence online. So that's everything from web development to social media marketing, content, PPC strategy, basically anything that people need to sort of grow their inbound leads and grow their presence online, really. So I kind of got into property a few years ago. So originally my business actually started out completely focused on the sales industry.
Yeah.
I can give you a whole big spiel on that if you want it, but I work traditionally with that industry, which is a traditional business that mostly operates offline. And so my big goal is really helping those businesses get online. And as I sort of decided to grow that, you know, I just helped more and more and more businesses. Then I kind of I started to invest in property about 3 years ago. Realized obviously that was quite a nice spot to put my profit for my business. And then kind of what's happened off the back of that is I realized that the property industry is very similar to the sales industry in that mostly they operate offline and they don't really understand digital and they know they should be doing it, but they don't know why or they don't know how. And so now a big part of, I guess, my marketing and my promotion is towards the property sector, where I work with investors, developers to, yeah, again, grow their own personal brands online or lead generation for their businesses.
So is that what you'd call a niche now, do you think?
I think so, yeah. It's kind of funny, isn't it? Because when you start getting into KPI, you start going all like into that. But yes, I'd say I pitch myself as a digital marketer for the property industry. But much like, you know, we all learn from dealing with niches is you start with a niche, but the amount of people that, so for example, I speak at a lot of property events, but most of the business I end up getting from property events is not actually property. So people approach me after and go, do you just work for property? Because I also have this other business. And I'm like, yes, most investors seem to have a lot on the go. So yeah, I would say I niche into property, but of course, you know, there's a big bag of all kinds of businesses that we work with.
Yeah. So I read your book, Get Online. So how's that landed in me? Got it here.
Yeah, amazing. Look at you. Thank you so much. Good. Ah, bless you. I love it when I see notes and books. I think it's great. I actually met up with a girl that was a client of mine a few years ago, and she was like, look what I've got. And she had like little post-its hanging out the side of it.
She?
And I was like, yeah, this is amazing. Because it actually means you've used it. It's not just like you've gone through it, you know? So it's amazing. Obviously, as you probably know from reading it, like a lot of the examples I tried to use were specifically for the property industry, just because, again, it's that industry that I think really struggle with understanding how to get online, what type of digital they should be doing, should it be social media, what is the purpose of it, what are they actually trying to achieve. I think there's a lack of knowledge in that industry. So So I use obviously a lot of examples for the property industry in the book, but it's been really good. And yeah, I use it as a business card, you know, I give it away at a lot of events that I speak at. Just try to distribute it wherever possible. And it's starting to get some traction. Yeah, it's one of those things that, have you gone through the book writing process?
So I've just finished, I'm just in layout, but Rick, my husband, wrote a book 2 years ago. So
amazing. Well, that's good that you've got that, like,
in the business, but I haven't used mine in the business yet.
Got it. Well, it's one of those things where, I don't mean to freak you out because you're still in the right, in the middle of it, but you're like, when you get it finished, you're like, yes, thank God, like, it's done, because it's so stressful and it just feels like you're putting so much into it. And then you actually realize that the hard work comes after when you've got to do all your marketing and promotion and all that kind of stuff, which I should know as a marketer. But it's one of those things that I definitely underestimated in terms of, like, the momentum you need to kind of get behind it. And you've got to keep on it, you know, that's the thing. You've got to keep on top of it. So yeah, it's been good. Yeah. It's been really good.
And I think that's what we've experienced in our business, is we give our book away because actually it's great for our business because it kind of helps people get to know us. And I think you talk about in your book, actually, don't you, that I wrote some notes somewhere and I can't remember the words you use, but the bigger the price tag, the more trust you need to build.
Yeah, absolutely. That's the thing. It's one of those things. And, you know, this is what's so crazy, I think, about the property industry too, is we're often seeking, most property entrepreneurs that I end up working with are trying to do two things. They're either, one, trying to find investment. So they're trying to get in front of investors to get investors into their projects or their developments or whatever. So they're going after, you know, significant amounts of money. We're probably talking, well, at minimum, we're talking 50 grand probably, right? For most types of businesses, up to millions in some cases. Yet they don't even consider spending a small proportion of what they're asking for someone to invest in their credibility and building their authority and communicating why somebody should invest in them. So I think it's sort of crazy. And then the other side of it, in terms of the property industry, where people are trying to get people involved, it's usually buying property. So it's, you know, they're trying to get to distressed sellers or landlords that are fed up or whatever it might be. And same thing, like, you're about to invest in a project, in property that's, you know, we're talking hundreds of thousands of pounds. And so, yeah, it's one of those things where we just need to build that correlation between brand development and building trust. And I think that's the thing that I talk to a lot of people about in this sector, is we're actually really, online and digital is not about replacing offline. I think that's something that I need to stress even more, because I think some people think, well, I've done offline forever and it's worked really well for me, and I'm really good at networking and I do all of my business offline. Why should I now do it online? I'm like, you don't really have a choice. Like, you sort of have to now. And if you're still getting away with not doing it online now, that's probably okay. But in 5 years' time, it's not going to be. No. And if you haven't sort of started to build a brand online, a business online, then you are going to get left behind. And I think one example I use with a lot of people is, you know, we all go to these networking events. I was at a networking event last Friday, 40 people in the room, full day event. Even being there a full day, I probably only had really decent conversations with, say, like 7 or 8 people. Like, conversations that I can remember, and I know what we spoke about, and I have their name, and I have their business card, and we'll do a follow-up. And that's a full day investment. And, you say you go to these events and I meet 40 people. You don't meet 40 people. You have decent conversations with a handful of people. And I think one thing that I'm talking a lot about is how much social media can help you to scale that. So, for example, you know, I ended up speaking to 7 or 8 different people, people asking lots of different questions about digital marketing and social. What I'm then able to do is go away and create a piece of video content talking about exactly those same questions, teaching people the same answers in which I talked about at the networking event, but put it out online and reach thousands of people that are inside my network across LinkedIn, Instagram, Twitter, and Facebook. And so it's really just about, for me, it's about scaling it. And, you know, like, we talk a lot about people like to consume a lot of information before they make a purchase decision, right? So it's like hours and hours of research that they do, whether that's reading content or watching videos or whatever. Just make it easy for them by putting it out there and helping them to find the information, or putting the information that you want them to find in front of them.
Yeah, you know? Absolutely.
It's what the podcast is about, right?
Yeah, definitely. And I think, like, that's why I've called our podcast Time to Profit. because I see what a lot of entrepreneurs are doing nowadays is actually moving away from the time for money thing and actually moving more towards profit. So they're actually like, you know, property investors do time for profit, right? Because actually we invest a small amount of time up front and then we get our payoff as profit for a number of years. We build those assets and then we look at how they grow over the different years. And you might change your mind at some point or sell one, but initially that upfront time and some kind of just tapping it along, property's not passive, as you probably understand as well.
Everyone's like, passive, I would love some passive income, property. I'm like, yeah, good luck. Yeah. Never invested in property.
Yeah, clearly. So I think that's why I'm pretty passionate about learning. I'm passionate about time, about protecting my time. And I love the kind of the combination of those two things and being able to scale online, because I think whilst we can all be digital nomads and not be kind of clear about why we want to go online, if you kind of have that mindset of its scalability, and people stalk you all over the place, don't they? I mean, I've had it where I've put a post on like Facebook and then perhaps gone onto Instagram and done it. And then the same person has kind of liked the same comment maybe an hour or so later, and perhaps not stalking me second by second. But we are more, I think, cross-platform than people.
Totally. Yes. Yeah. Absolutely. I think people are everywhere, and I talk a lot in the book about the familiarity principle. And that's just about, you know, building, you know, something we know, then we begin to like it, then we begin to trust it. And you hear this a lot in business, or specifically in the property industry too. Know, like, trust, right? It's all about relationships. And the familiarity principle is one of those psychological phenomenons that it's based on no logic at all. It's just a human instinct that the more you see something, the more fond you become of it, and then the more you trust it. It's crazy. And, you know, I use an example all the time. I think I might have used one in the book, or I use this when I speak a lot, is, you know, you go to a cafe and you go there every Friday and you sit in the corner seat with your laptop and you do your little bits and pieces catching up on email. You see, you know, a guy sitting across from you. He's always there on a Friday. You give him a little smile. You don't know him, but you see him there every week. So you think it's fine. Then you've got to run to the loo. So you say to him, you know, can you just, do you mind watching my laptop? Just going to run to the bathroom. Yes, of course. No problem. You don't know the guy, but because you've seen him five or six times, for some reason you trust him.
Yeah.
And it's kind of crazy, but that is what digital and social can do for you. And I know that that kind of freaks people out a little bit sometimes, that it isn't based on anything substantial. But it's a human instinct that the more we see something, the more we start to like it. Therefore, the more we trust it, and we're more likely to do business with. Yeah. So that's what I think digital and social does for a business. It's about visibility, becoming familiar so that your audience trusts you, so that when you do have something you want them to invest in or something to sell, that they're more open to it because you already have a relationship.
That's absolutely true. And I think one of the things we do is, and we kind of like been educated against it in some respects, is kind of copying. Yeah. So we copy each other's behavior, and the fact that you're talking to somebody in a coffee shop, they're copying your behavior or you're copying their behavior, it doesn't really matter, does it? But the point is, you're both doing the same thing, and that builds that familiarity principle.
Totally.
But I think we forget some of this basic stuff, as because we get educated on not copying other people's homework, about having, you know, our own views and our own principles. But actually, when we're online, people need to feel that we're kind of normal. I see a lot of people put a lot of posts out about hustling all the time, working really hard. And personally, I try and balance it with a little bit of my own life and my own work, because I kind of want people to think that I do live some of the dream of like not working all the time, that, you know, property does provide an income, my assets provide an income, my business provide an income, but I get to downscale that and do normal things. So I think sometimes you have to be careful with that content that's going out there, because you don't want people to, I've seen some people where I think they're working so hard, that's not what I want from them and their business.
I think, you know, it's what I mean? Yeah, I do 100%. I think that's a Gary Vee thing, right? Like, I think it's one of those things where it depends what you're offering, right? Like, if you are offering, it depends what your service is. If you're somebody who teaches people how to become, you know, build a seven-figure business or something, then yeah, they need to see that you work hard, but they also need to see that you actually enjoy your life. So it makes total sense that you're, you know, to be able to share, you know, holidays and things you're doing with your family and whatever it might be. I think that's super important. And people lose sight of that actually, yes, you have to work hard to be able to achieve and live this sort of lifestyle. But if you don't have a life outside of the business, then that's not inspiring either. Whereas, you know, there might be other industries where people don't really, they want to know. They don't need to see that about you. I'm trying to think of an example off the top of my head, but
I guess it might be the politicians. I don't know.
Yeah, it could be something like that. Medical industry came to my head for some reason where...
Not so much,
you don't want to see people having a, you know, if you're having very serious surgery or something, you don't want to see your surgeon going off having some crazy whackable weekend, you know, because you want to visualize him in a certain way. So I think that all this is about understanding who are you, what is your business, what are you trying to promote, and who's your audience, and what do they need to know about you in order for that to be able to build trust. But yeah, I think people get lost. People get lost in the reality TV and influencer sort of, you know, all of that stuff that sort of happens online, and they think they need to be that rather than just showing the reality of their life. So I think it's just, and I think people just get confused, to be honest. I think it's really important to just really stay focused on who are you? What is your business? What do you want people to know about you? What do people want to know about you? In order for them to build a relationship and have that trust, I think. And that should be dictating anything. If we're talking about just lifestyle, social stuff, then that should be dictating what you're posting, you know?
Yeah. I think you made a good point there. I mean, it's easy to kind of forget your customer avatar. And I guess I was coming straight at it from my own experience. But actually, you're right. You don't want your surgeon showing up with, you know, a bottle of Prosecco the night before your surgery, do you?
Exactly. It's like, yeah, just thinking about like what impression do you want to give, you know? I think that's important.
Totally get that. Some of that come from your sales? You talk in the book about how you started out with sales stuff. So are you always kind of going back to that key stuff of like working out who your customer avatar is all the time?
Absolutely, yeah. I mean, I think when it comes to marketing, you can't do it without customer avatar. I think that's hugely, hugely important. But yeah, sales is everything, right? Because at the end of the day, marketing is great, but if you can't convert those leads into a sale, then they're irrelevant. So I think I use my sales background a lot in business. You know, I actually am not a trained marketer. I've done marketing for the last 8 or 9 years, but I was actually self-taught. So the first few projects I worked on, I taught myself. I'm really a salesperson. And for me, learning marketing was about building a funnel in order to get more sales.
Yeah.
Obviously, as my agency's grown, then I've hired marketers and designers and copywriters and all that kind of stuff. They're much more talented than I am. My background really is sales. And actually, you said something earlier, which kind of makes sense with regards to sales in terms of mimicking people around you. And that's a sales tactic. I hate the word tactic. It makes it sound really smart. It's more like you always imitate the person that you're trying to do business with, right? So if you're doing it on a face-to-face basis and they're sitting down, they're quite relaxed, then you would sit down and be quite relaxed. Because if you start to be quite uptight, that puts people off. So these are all sorts of things that you need to understand about your customers. So I think, you know, there's lots of different things like that I think play into the whole funnel. But certainly, you know, coming from a sales background helps me to look at the numbers a lot more, as in what do we actually need to do for conversions? Because again, I think people get really, really lost and say, you know, I need to do social media. My question is always, what for? And they're like, oh, well, I don't know, because everybody does it now. And I'm like, nope, that's not a good reason. Like, you have to have a reason for you doing what you want to do. There has to be some kind of metric that you're actually trying to measure so that we can dictate success. And mostly that's about me protecting my own reputation, because I don't want clients to hire me and, you know, 6 months down the line go, oh, well, nothing's really happened. And me saying, well, you didn't really have a goal. You just wanted to post stuff online. I want you to have a metric. I want you to have a purpose in place if we're going to work together, so that I can benchmark and show you this is the progress that we've made. It's resulted in this much traffic to your website, or this many leads have been obtained, or, you know, this could convert it to this many sales or whatever. But I think having that kind of sales mentality certainly helps, because I think a lot of, again, I'm talking about sort of entry-level businesses here, but often they just think they need to be online. They haven't really thought about why or what they're actually trying to achieve.
Yeah. You talked about funneling, and where does that come from? Because we use what we call funneling in our business, and we track through sales, make sure they convert. We understand kind of what numbers we need at the top to get at the bottom. But that's quite an American concept, and I think we're quite unusual, certainly in the UK, to use funneling. Mm. But Jack, have you grown up with that? Is it more common than I expect?
Well, I don't know. So I'm from New Zealand. I'm trying to think if I would have learned something different along those lines. I mean, it is basic marketing. You know, yeah. I think the thing is you start with a bigger pool and you kind of narrow it down, right? And I guess probably where I first started learning about looking at numbers was sales. So it is the sales background where I start to look at, okay, you know, we need this many inquiries, this many conversations, this many meetings to convert to this many sales. And essentially marketing is exactly the same. It's just a bigger funnel, right? So you're starting with a much broader pool of people and you're getting them to signal the whole way down, getting them closer and closer and closer to the salesperson to be able to convert that sale. So it's just logic, I think, yeah. At this point. Like, I don't know, it's hard for me to think outside the box to think, did we ever not do this? But
I have a theory that it comes from trained as an accountant, so I mm-hmm. have this whole and I trained as an industry accountant, so a cost accountant, and we always had this process of understanding where costs occurred in a manufacturing process, and as a product goes through that, it picks up costs. And for me, marketing has become much more about the numbers, analyzing the different metrics, and there's always been the bit at the bottom around costing and accountancy, but there's not really been much at the top. And it's almost like the digital world has enabled that whole transformation for us to use statistics, kind of conversion rates, and do all those things. And I see there's almost like a digital accountant now at the top, and maybe that's my background and my narrowness coming at sales and marketing. But it just feels like very much more about the numbers nowadays.
Yeah, I think it's interesting. Do you know, I think that stems from the ability to be able to track more.
Yeah.
So I think if you think to traditional forms of marketing, for example, doing things like mail drops or something. Okay, we could only really measure how many phone calls came into the call center or whatever it was. We don't know how many people picked up that letter off the floor and looked at it. That was something that you couldn't measure using that traditional form of marketing. Same with regards to billboards, right? We can rent a billboard in the middle of the city, have a billboard up there. We know on average you get this many people that go past that location every single day. But you couldn't know. Now you can because they can track with for visuals and all this kind of stuff. But you weren't able to track how many people were actually reading it and what sort of impact that was actually having. So I think that was sort of, you know, old style marketing. With digital, you can measure that. You know, we know from advertising across social channels how many impressions, how many people are watching a video past 3 seconds, 10 seconds, 25 seconds. We know we can follow them around all over the internet. We know what they did, what they researched. That is trackable now. So I think that all of that kind of, I guess the digital side of things in that sense has attributed to metrics, right? Being able to track numbers more, and we can visually see the impact that has on the in sale, I don't know, it's a long-winded explanation, but essentially I think it's come from the ability now to be able to actually track that.
It's much more powerful, isn't it? And you talk in your book about how marketing principles haven't changed, but how we have does. So, and that's kind of the digital scalability, isn't it?
Yeah, it's one of those things where it's the method in terms of how we market something haven't changed, but the tactics have. And the tactics will always change, right? Because that will be determined by technology. It will also be determined by social economics and the way that we like to consume information and the way that we're able to consume information. But certainly, it's very much just around, exactly like you just said.
So how do you see some of the platforms performing then? So, like, I see journalists hanging out on Twitter, and
apparently
us oldies are all on Facebook now, and I think I've got my head around Instagram. I'm quite liking it, but it probably took me about 6 to 12 months of just going, what is this all about? So, you know, where do you see?
Well, I think I get asked this question actually quite a lot, and I think the thing is, one thing I'll just point out is don't assume anybody is in any one place, because Facebook isn't just for oldies, and that's not you. You know, there's the growing number of people on Instagram in their 50s and 60s is just phenomenal. It's like the fastest growing group across Instagram. So, you know, I think we have this tendency to think, oh, this is new, so it's kind of for the kids or whatever. It's like, or you've got your sort of, you know, 15 to 18 year olds that are using what's the one
Snapchat,
that just
poured out,
but whilst, no, not Snapchat.
Oh, I told you I was old.
Well, I can't even remember the name of it now. It just got rebranded to the Chinese company that just bought it up. Anyway, it's like a video thing that all the kids are using now that just seems kind of crazy. But I think,
is it TikTok?
Yeah. So it used to be called Musical.ly, and then it got
name
changed to TikTok. That's it. We got back on the right page. Yeah. So. You know, we make assumptions about who's on which platforms. And I think from a marketing perspective, that's a really terrible thing to do. I think we need to, because all of our assumptions are based on our own experiences, right? Yeah. So we're thinking about what we know about that platform, what we're comfortable with. We're not thinking about what our audience are actually doing. So I guess the first point I'll make with this is, make sure that you know who your audience is and speak to them about which platforms are they actually using. Don't make an assumption that they're this demographic and this age group, therefore they must be using X. Because I just think sometimes it can be really surprising, especially if you're cross-channel marketing. You know, I've had clients before that have said 100%, Instagram's our platform, our engagement levels there are so much better, blah, blah, blah. When we actually looked into the data, we actually saw that all of their conversions, and this is a product business, but all of their conversions actually came from Pinterest, the one platform that they actually didn't care about at all.
Yeah.
They just happened to be dumping some content there every few months. And actually that is where there was a huge chunk, almost 40% of the sales were coming from that one platform. So, and unless you look at that data, you don't really know. So I think first thing is just make sure you know who your audience is and which platforms they're actually using. But in terms of sort of trends with regards to social media platforms, you know, there's been a huge shift recently. Everybody knows, for example, organic reach on Facebook now is just awful. So unless you're spending money on advertising, it's very, very difficult to get traction organically across Facebook. The exception there obviously is groups, and groups are growing. There's lots of testing and community building and all this kind of stuff happening across Facebook. That can be something that's super powerful. There's been a huge migration from Facebook across to LinkedIn for businesses.
Yeah.
Video content on LinkedIn obviously is performing incredibly well compared to any other platform right now. Again, Instagram is thriving. Instagram's really, essentially a lot of people have moved from Facebook to Instagram too, because it's just easier to consume information. It's less obvious the advertising that you're getting on Instagram because it's very content driven.
Yeah.
But that's just what's happened in the last couple of months. And we all know that, you know, a couple more months and that's all going to shift and change again as all of these platforms test different things out and new things come out. So you've got, you know, stories and all this. I think even WhatsApp now has a story, like daily stories, things that you can post. So, you know, it's a constant shift. There's things that are constantly changing. And I think that's why actually having some metrics in place and monitoring how things are performing become really, really important, because sometimes you've done something one way for the last year and it's worked perfectly. And then all of a sudden it doesn't work anymore. And if you haven't kept track of what's actually happening with your content or the way that people are engaging and interacting with you, then that could be quite shocking and put you into quite a poor situation. You know, I've actually got a client that we just took on a few months ago that stopped investing in SEO a few years back and went totally into paid ads, which is absolutely fine, no problem, that's what they did. But with the new algorithm change came out with Google, and their 25-year-old website literally disappeared. out of the search results. And when that equates for 60% of your business revenue, that is a huge issue. And they will spend the next 2 years rebuilding that, rebuilding their SEO, and actually having to spend a lot of money inside AdWords in order to get that business back. And that's a real shame. And that's just because they sort of took their eye off the ball and stopped investing in SEO. So I think it's just one of these, I don't mean to tell that story as in it's quite scary for people, but it is one of those things that we do need to keep an eye on.
Yeah. And it's so painful, isn't it? Because actually a small entrepreneurial business, if you've got to maintain all of these platforms and keep, you know, drive content out there and just keep track of technological changes, all that sort of stuff.
Sorry, then, Lorraine, I've just had somebody knock on my door, but I've got this room booked, so hold on for me just 1 second.
Okay, cool.
Hi, Lorraine. I'm so sorry. I had this room booked for an hour, but this girl has double booked it.
Okay, no worries.
I'm doing a terrible job interrupting you.
Do you want to pause and come back?
Or can yeah. Is that okay?
Yeah, of course.
Is that okay? I'm so sorry.
Someone
was just knocking. I was like, what are they doing? Bear with me. Let me just go and find out what's happened. I'll just go and speak to the office and see what's happened. And I'll just see if I can nip into another room.
Okay, cool. All
apologies.
Right.
Apologies. I'll be back in life.
Fine.
Can I just come back onto this line?
What do you think?
Yeah, actually, yeah.
Or Facebook message me if we lose each other.
Okay fine. Sounds cool. Good. Thank you so much. Sorry.
No, it's all right.
Lorraine, I'm so sorry. I'm heading to another meeting room now.
Cool, don't worry.
I'm catching up on emails.
Okay. All right, I think I'm good.
You're good. Cool.
Oh my God, I'm so sorry.
That's all right. It happens.
I know, they're just like, oh my God, double booked the night. Co-working.
Cool. So, you're all right? You're chilled now?
So, apologies.
Honestly, chilled out, that's fine.
I forgot what we were talking about. Do you remember?
No, no, mate. I should have made a note. Hang on.
Okay, we were talking about social media trends, different platforms, and then you were going to ask another question, but I kind of interrupted you.
That's fine. I've got a brain like a sieve. I can't remember. Okay, cool. So I've got a couple more questions to ask you. So are you okay for time? Do you
another? Yeah, I'm okay now. Yeah.
Great. Okay, so in your book, Get Online, you have 6 C's of digital marketing.
I do indeed.
So can you explain what they are and how you found these things that work for you?
Yeah, definitely. So it's really... 6 principles to building a digital marketing strategy that actually works. And the first C is connect. And connect is all about the branding of the business, visually how it looks, how it sounds, how it feels. It's also about the way, who your audience is, so understanding exactly who your audience, we briefly touched on customer avatar, et cetera, already, understanding who they are. And also understanding your own USP. So what do you have to offer? What makes you different from every other business out there? Having a really strong, unique selling proposition is important so that people can understand who you are as a business and what you bring to the table and why you're the best choice. So it's all about establishing that connection with your audience. So the first C is connect. The second one is create. And create is all about, once you understood who your audience is and you want to build that connection, it's about creating content that is going to speak to the audience. And you've probably heard lots of marketers talk before about all the different types of content that need to be created. So that could be something visual, it could be something audio, it could be something written, could be something actionable. I obviously recommend all 4. I think that's really important. I try to make sure that we cover that in our business too. So for example, as you know, I have a podcast, which is audio. My book will actually eventually be on Audible as well, so as an audio product. We do a lot of video content and we do a lot of photography images of our team and things that we're doing, different events, so there's something visual people can consume. We also write blogs for our own website. And there's also a lot of articles and things that I contribute to. So I'm a contributor to Inc. magazine, for example. That content gets published out across the internet. There's lots of written form that people can consume. And then there's actionable items too. So those are things like checklists that people can download and do from our website. We have an online digital test that people can take, so digital marketing test. So it's an actionable item people can actually do to help them to understand. And the reason that I think it's really important to do all those forms of content for the second C, which is create, is because we all like to consume information in different ways, right? And it's not even about individual people. I like to consume information in different ways depending on where I am in my week. So, for example, I'm more than happy to sit at home on a Sunday night and binge watch videos, whereas I don't have time to do that during the week, but I will listen to podcasts and audiobooks on my commute into the office.
Yeah.
On a Thursday, I always dedicate Thursdays to my own business, and I build my own business and put real thought into what's happening with my own marketing and things like that. On those days, I'm more than happy to do, to read blogs or read articles or read a book or do actionable items like strategies and checklists and all that kind of stuff. So we all like to consume information in different ways. And I think, you know, I think you mentioned something earlier about how people enjoy to binge on things and people like to stalk you all over the internet and all that kind of stuff. And I think it's just, you want to put content out there that makes it easy for them.
Yeah.
You know? So that's the second C. Do you have a question about that one?
No. So, just nodding and agreeing.
Just keep going. Yeah, so the third C is captivate. And captivate for me is all about how are we going to get that content we've created in front of your audience and captivate their attention. In most cases, this does mean advertising. So it's, you know, your Facebook ads, your Google ads, Instagram ads, whatever's relevant for your particular industry. So captivating their attention. And then the fourth C is capture. So how are we going to capture their details, right? Because, or their information. So that could be a lead form, a pop-up form, some kind of landing page where we're going to capture their information. We've probably given them something in exchange to actually to receive that. That is really, really important. And they do need to be, you know, I work with a lot of businesses where they just have a contact page on their website. And I'm like, it's not going to work. Like, you really do need to prompt people. You know, you have to have like captivated their attention, given them something juicy in exchange for their contact information. And then the fifth C is converse. And this is the one that it seems obvious and everybody knows they should do it, but everybody wants to skip this part. Everybody, once they have somebody's contact information, they just want to sell to them. And I'm like, no, we need to have conversations. We need to converse. We need to build relationships. And this is where your social media comes into play, your email pipelines or funnels, all of this kind of stuff needs to happen during this converse phase where we're really establishing the relationship before we move on to the sixth C, which is convert, which is when we're able to do the sale. And it's really just about slowly bringing people through this pipeline so that they feel really comfortable with the business. They feel like you've given them a lot of value, that trust has been built before we try to go and get them to invest in our projects or you know, buy our product or buy our training or whatever it is that we're selling.
Yeah, and I think you've just captured one of the capture.
Yeah, I should have been in one of my seventh C.
You've just
encapsulated,
shall we say, then the whole idea that you can't just put a product on a website and expect people to rock by and buy it. And I see a lot of people who think, because my book that's coming out is about putting courses online and about how entrepreneurs can monetize their knowledge. Mm. One of my three principles and pillars is actually you have to sell what you're promoting. You can't just have a contact form on your website and expect people to do that, or even just to put a few posts on social media. There needs to be a full process behind that.
Yeah, I'm so glad that you've said that, because it's the bane of my existence where I'm like, come on, like, you have people, it kind of sucks. Like, I get it. I talk to people all the time where they're like, we never used to have to do this, or it just didn't used to take so long. And I'm like, I get it, but get over it, because now it does. Yeah. Now people have unlimited options. They really do. They've got a lot of choice out there, and they want to do research. They want to have a connection with someone that they're buying a product from. So you do, unfortunately, if you want the business, you have to earn it. Like, you really have to work for it. And that's just how it is, you know? And I've got clients I've worked with for the last 8 years. I've got a client I've worked with 8.5 years. And we actually have arguments frequently where he's like, but when we started, we never used to have to, you know, we never used to have to give away so much stuff. And I'm like, yeah, I know it sucks, but now you do. Like, unfortunately, you do. That's just how it is. People expect a lot more for free. They expect real value before they're willing to actually part with their hard-earned cash. And, you know, sometimes it is really unfortunate for small businesses because they don't always have, you know, the ability to be able to invest in a lot of marketing and that kind of thing. I think the thing is, as long as you've like thought about the pipeline and you've worked, you know the lifetime value of your customer, therefore you've figured out how much you can invest in the marketing, that needs to be built into your expenditure and to your revenue and what you're going to be charging, because the reality is that you do need to do it.
Do you think all of this stuff is pushing entrepreneurs towards more big ticket items. I see a lot of entrepreneurs who are struggling with 20, 30 pound products, and they haven't got a big product to sort of be able to leverage some decent profit, because we all need to make money, don't we? You know,
of course.
We're putting our time out there. We're putting some investment. We want some time freedom back. So at some point we have to get that profit. And I see quite a lot of entrepreneurs who get really disheartened with the whole online thing when they have a really small product that actually, you know, they can't scale in the same sort of way without big advertising revenues.
I mean, I think, in all honesty, I think actually that comes from a bit of a confidence thing, because I think the reality is we all need a bit of an ecosystem, right? We all have to have the small products that we sell to generate the interest, build the trust, kind of get people into our pool so that we can continue to, well, I hate saying sell to them, but that is the reality of what we're doing, right? To sell to them. And sometimes you need to give them a little taster of something before they're ready to do a bigger investment, right? So I think, yes, we are seeing more people think about, I think it's actually the opposite. I think the people that would have had the big ticket items originally now have to offer the smaller items to get people through the pipeline. I think that's a change. And then I think what new people that come to market see is, okay, we start off by doing all these little products and small scale, selling a 20, 50 pound product or whatever it might be. But at that point, they've only learned how to sell that 50 pound product. So they then don't know how to sell the 5,000 pound product or whatever it is. And then because predominantly, it kind of depends on the audience that you're targeting, but if your product is quite cheap, so if we're talking like sort of a 40, 50 pound a month thing, you're usually going to attract, I guess, a type of demographic. If it's an online training and things like that, people don't potentially have the money to invest, for example, in a full scale.
Exactly. Yeah.
So yeah. I have that from my experience, right? Like a lot of people say, why don't you run a membership community and teach people how to do marketing? And I'm like, I would actually love to do that because I do really enjoy helping people understand that. But I also know that that is a lot of work.
Yeah.
And actually, to be able to get them from there to going to full service with my digital agency, that's a huge leap, like a really, really big leap. And I think it's quite unlikely. So I think that's actually a totally different business model. And I think that's possibly where people get a little bit stuck sometimes. They think, you know, we'll start off with this cheaper product, see how it goes, and plan to eventually have that bigger product, but perhaps get stuck in a bit of a rut. And then it's a lack of confidence to be able to upsell to that bigger product. It's just my observation of kind of what happens.
Yeah, and I think industries need to look at their ecosystem, don't they? Because actually, I suppose it can go the other way, where you can be top heavy and have all you need is three or four clients a year, but then you have no, it's almost like the property developers flip, you know, the kind of actually, in a business model where you've got big consultancy projects going out for one or two clients, you're making a lot of money in one go, but then perhaps don't have the underlying recurring income that a nice asset-driven business would have. And that's kind of, I think, where people can improve their circumstances. One of the things you talk about in the book as well, though, is that like those small free giveaways, smaller products, they must be remarkable still. Mm-hmm. Where does that come from in your...
I think it's because people don't, I guess it's the age old thing of like, actually the cheaper something is, the more expectation people have. I don't know where it comes from. Maybe it's that people love a bargain. I don't know. I'm not sure, but it's one of those things that, and I can speak from experience, like the clients that I've worked with in the past that are often on the cheaper packages, they're the biggest pains in the ass. Like they really are. And it's, you know, because they're looking at every nitty gritty, little tiny detail. Whereas often when there's a little bit more money to use, then people are a bit more experimental and open to trying things and know that some things will work and some things won't, et cetera, et cetera. So I don't know. I think it maybe just comes from that. I don't know.
Yeah, I'd certainly experienced that myself in our business, but I also think where the money mindset is wrong, you know, where people are penny pinching over certain things, they don't have an open mindset or an open mindset to making mistakes that cost money. A lot of people see money and mistakes as kind of wasteful, rather than actually return on investment is the learning.
Yeah.
I quite like sometimes understanding the mistakes we've made, because those mistakes are learning opportunities, right?
Totally. Yeah. But you're unlikely to make the same ones again. That's
exactly.
Sure.
It's terrible when you don't know why, really, because then you can't improve. You can't look at how to do that, move that forward. So
yeah. Well, I think to kind of, your question was really about why does it need to be remarkable? I think it just comes from value, right? Like if, and again, this is understanding the pipeline you're trying to push people through. So if somebody, if you're trying to get somebody from a, you know, £50 a month package to a, you know, spending a couple of £1,000 on a course or something like that, then you have to give a lot of value away in those early stages to show why this is worth investing this couple of £1,000 in. So I think it's about proving worth. And I think that comes from delivering real value. It also just makes you feel good, doesn't it? Like if you're giving away something really valuable for quite a decent price, I think that is, that makes me feel good.
Yeah, definitely. And I'm going to have to pause here now because I've just realized I've got my computer plugged in. So it's on low battery.
No problems. No problems.
2 seconds. Right, sorry.
Don't worry, we're right here. We are, aren't we?
Bite the audio and then I can pick it up quicker. So I think with the bigger online products, one of the challenges I think people have is that actually, if they just feel they're getting information rather than an experience, then they're less likely to buy. And that's what I think has changed recently. People don't want big course programs or big kind of rooms full of people, where all they're getting is perhaps content. They want the experience, they want the handholding, they want the mentoring, they want your knowledge rather than your information. So
yeah, well, I think in the property industry there's a huge opportunity there for, you know, taking people on site to a project and really talking them through things. Exactly. Like that is the tangible, wow, I never would have, if it's my first time investing in something, that's a really tangible opportunity to learn something, you know? And I think you're right. I don't think it's about theory. I think people are looking for that practical experience or that practical education that actually makes it feel super valuable, you know? And we do that in all of our workshops too. We started running a content workshop a couple of months ago, and I didn't want it to be theoretical. There's a lot of theory-based content marketing things out there. Like, you know, there's thousands of them.
Yeah.
And we chose to do a practical one, you know, where we start with a bit of theory in the morning and then it's practical, where we're filming stuff in the afternoon. We've got a photographer, we're doing photo shoots. We're actually using apps to create content. People find it so valuable because it's a tangible thing that they've learned, but they don't actually have to go and figure it out on their own, right? It's like the how. I think the how is often missing sometimes from those sorts of entry-level products, at least.
Yeah, definitely. So you talk about the content waterfall. Is that the kind of...
repurposing?
Yeah.
Yeah, I love it. It's funny, like, this is something that we have done for the last, 8 years probably longer. So before I started my business, I was freelancing. So probably even longer than 8 years. But for me, it's always made sense with regards to content to, we always say, milk it for all it's worth and find different ways of putting it out there. And I think it probably came from my early days of working with quite small businesses where they actually didn't have a lot to work with, you know, like they didn't really have much going on. So you're trying to like really juice it for all it's worth. So we would take a piece of content and make it into multiple forms of content. So, and eventually we started calling it the content waterfall, and it was kind of a joke at first, just because it was kind of crazy. Like, you know, we were going from recording a video interview with a client and I think at one point we turned it into nearly 200 pieces of content. It was just literally crazy. And now we kind of teach that method, and I talk about it in the book, where, yeah, essentially if you plan well with your content creation, you can create what we would call a core piece of content, a really great, juicy, valuable piece of core content. And then you can repurpose that into multiple forms. So, you know, if that's a video, you might be dicing it up into 10 to 12 smaller videos. You may then strip off the audio and release it as a podcast. Each of the little subjects you've touched on in the little 1 or 2 minute videos can be turned into blog posts, either by transcribing or even better, writing an article or a blog post in more detail, adding all the facts and statistics and really backing up what you've said in that little snippet. Then take that article, and I always work with all my copywriters. I'm like, if you cannot turn, you know, a 600 word blog into at least 20 tweets, the quality is just not good enough. And we really push back on our copywriters with that, because you should be able to repurpose it into that much content. Take, you know, that same article and create 4 or 5 different images to shoot out across all your social channels. You can take those images, turn them into slide decks. You know, there's just, it's all about asking the right questions and creating that. As long as your core content is really high quality and valuable, then there's plenty of ways to use the content waterfall to actually repurpose it and create loads of content. And I think it's something that the reason people have got so excited about it off the back of the book is if you plan it well, you can really do a content session once a quarter, and then that can be repurposed to create a whole 3 months worth of content.
Yeah, I mean, that is amazing. It takes the headache out of content creation. You just, you know, and that's kind of the headache, the real headache for us is sometimes just, you know, have we said this before, and where have we said it, and does it matter, and all of that, those issues.
Yeah, I think that's an interesting one too, around like communicating the same message, because a lot of people get kind of, I get that question a lot where people are like, oh, I don't need to be posting that much, or I've already said that before. I'm like, no one remembers. Like, they really don't. And they need to hear it. Like, they need to hear it multiple times before it really sinks in, you know? I think the one thing with that is to remember that not everybody sees everything.
No, true.
Like,
especially, we're also busy, aren't we?
Well, yeah. And especially everything. Constantly busy. And also these, you know, the new, especially if you're doing things organically on social media, like your visibility isn't great. So you do have to keep pushing content repeatedly so that people get it. So I always tell clients, like, don't get too nervous about sharing the same thing. Like, you know, not word for word, but like the same messaging.
Yeah.
That helps people to understand what it is that you do.
How many, I mean, Google did the whole zero point of truth report, didn't they? And talking about how recognition and the buying point of marketing has gone up. What would you say, in your experience, which I kind of value far more than some silly Google report, but what would you say practically, you think your customers, your clients, they get that recognition, the number of touch points as such?
Touch points? Oh, I think it comes down to quality. I think it comes down to what are they consuming, because this is the thing. People get really bogged down on touch points, right? Oh, I've got to give people 12 points of contact.
Yeah.
Well, if those 12 points of contact aren't great, then actually that could hurt your business and doesn't make impact, you know? A typical example of this is I've got people that want to shoot out on an email, you know, their favorite motivational quote of the day. Well, they do this on their social media and stuff as well. I'm like, for what purpose exactly? And what is that actually helping your audience to do? Like, fair enough, if you're, you know, if you're teaching, you know, how to change your mindset and if working on, you know, a specific type of motivation, okay, maybe it makes sense. But it doesn't make sense for the majority of us. And it seems to be people's kind of like go-tos a lot without really thinking about what we want that point to do. So if we're going to communicate with people across multiple touch points, let's just make sure that the content actually makes sense for them and is actually valuable and helpful. Because, and I guess the second part to that, to the answer to the question, is every industry is a bit different. So as much as I would love to say, okay, it needs to be
6.35.
Yeah, I think it really does differ. And I think it comes a lot, I think it's industry specific. I also think it's price point specific. You know, I will, a good example of this, I scroll through Instagram. Literally the other day, I'm trying to go plastic free wherever possible. You might have seen on my Instagram, we always do a 7-day plastic free challenge every month in our business. So I obviously get lots of advertising for plastic free alternatives and products and things. So on Instagram, for example, the other day I saw an ad for I guess it's like this alternative to plastic. Not wax paper, the wax paper that people use, but there's another alternative. It popped up on Instagram. I clicked on it, purchased it. First time I've ever seen it, but just bought it straight away. Literally never seen that product before. Yeah. However, if I was looking to invest in, when I did my property education, for example, I did Simon's Issues Mastermind program a few years ago, learning about property investment. That is a huge chunk of cash to spend on education. So that was not an impulsive decision. I needed to attend multiple events, networking events to get understand what it is. I needed to speak to a few different people that had done it. I watched some videos on success stories. So there was a much longer purchase process that I went through for that product offering. So I think it's great that these reports come out all the time and tell people, okay, you need 7 touch points, 12 touch points, 27 touch points. But I think it really is specific to a business and an industry. And this all comes down to understanding who your customer is, who the audience is, what they need to know, and then also what you're offering and how that differentiates from everybody else, so that it's really clear and easy to understand, and that you've got enough credibility and authority there to be that person that they want to buy from.
Yeah, so true. So what's next for you? Are you going to write another book, or are you creating a massive content waterfall off the back of your book?
Yeah, I know, right? I am a little bit, because I'm doing a lot of contributions to some platforms, different platforms online at the minute. I do have I'm contributing to another book that's coming out next month, actually, or later this month, Legacy, which is all about social impact. And about how businesses contribute to the SDGs, Sustainable Development Goals. So that's really exciting. I've got a few trips coming up. So we're doing a bit of a team trip out to Cambodia in a couple of weeks' time. We're going to be doing a little bit of pro bono work. There's a bit of a shift in our agency now where, because we've kind of got to that point where the book and the podcast and courses and stuff are bringing business into us, now we're really lucky and fortunate to be able to choose some of the projects that we're working on, which is such a luxurious position to obviously be in. But what's got me really excited is actually working with some businesses that are making real social impact and green impact. And I'm finding that a lot actually in the property industry too, where people are moving their developments towards being eco and green and all this kind of thing, which those are the sorts of projects I'm really excited about. So we've got a huge focus for the rest of the year on those sorts of marketing campaigns. We're really just looking, I'm doing a lot more speaking, a lot more promotion, I guess, of the agency. And that's kind of the focus for the rest of the year. So it's good times.
Cool. So you're still investing in property?
I am. Yeah. I'm such a boring investor. All of your listeners are probably thinking, oh God, single lets is the way for me. Yeah. And that's mostly just because my agency is my full-time gig. And yeah, my property portfolio is really my long-term pension pot, as we like to call it. Yeah. But yeah, definitely. I'm really involved. I do a lot of networking and property events and speaking to a lot of investors, developers all the time. So I like to keep my finger on the pulse. So when there are little opportunities that come up, I know about them.
Well, it's great though, isn't it? Because actually through collaboration, we will survive any of the economic downturns, upturns, changes, political dimensions, all of these things that will come and challenge us. But I always think it's a privilege to be able to, property's about people.
Yeah,
and actually it's a privilege to be able to develop a property portfolio in the UK, to be able to provide better homes for people. So it's great to hear that, you know, you're able to combine some of the green credentials you're looking at and also make an investment for the future. And that's what it's all about, isn't it? It's all about providing for and investing our time and making sure we make some profit. So thank you very much for coming on my show today. And
thank you.
I've really enjoyed talking to you. So how would listeners reach out to you if they wanted to contact you?
The best way to get in contact is probably via email. So it's Stacey, S-T-A-C-E-Y, at BrandLective, which is spelled BrandLective.com. It's a bit of a tricky one. Or across, obviously, my social networks. So I'm on LinkedIn, Instagram, Twitter, Facebook. And my handle is Stacey Keogh UK. So definitely.
As you would expect.
Thanks, Lorraine. I think I've loved it. Thanks for having me and for reading my book and knowing it inside out. It's fantastic. I really enjoyed that.
No, I really enjoyed it. And I'll put some links in the bio for you. So thanks very much.
Thank you.
What a great episode from Stacey there. And I just want to reiterate how great her book is, Get Online. I've actually got a copy in my hand right now, and it's the 6 simple steps to launching a digital marketing strategy for the non-tech savvy. And that's available online and in paperback as well. In her summary, Stacey talks very much about being the evolution of your digital marketing strategy and how one day you can be doing it and it can be working, and the next day you need to be looking at how to change, make amendments, evaluate what you're doing and move forwards, and don't expect the same strategy to be working with you forever. So I think that's really key. I mean, every day is a learning day, right? And that's what we are promoting, is e-learning, getting online, developing yourself, moving forward. And I think Stacey's book is a great tool to pick up some tips and tricks. Even if you're doing it, you're smashing it now. I think social media is one of those constantly evolving things, and we can always learn something about it. So what a great interview with Stacey. Connect with her, buy a book, and I'll see you on the next episode. Don't forget to subscribe and like the podcast. It really helps us get great new guests along and helps us keep going so that we can share the message and get things out there.